We're back. It's Downtown on a Tuesday afternoon. Some basketball talk. Yeah, let's do that. A lot going on these days. John Corrales from Boston Sports Journal and the Locked On Celtics podcast joins us. All right, let's get right to the big question here. What were the Kings thinking?
You know, look, they got decent players back in return. It's just like a very confusing, very Sacramento deal that they gave up Tyrese Halliburton as part of a package to get back Domantas Sabonis and Jeremy Lamb and Justin Holiday. Like, okay, they actually did okay talent-wise. I just don't know that does anything. That doesn't move the needle for me. And the thing with the Kings, and I guess I got to stop thinking normally when it comes to the Kings. it feels like a very win-now move for a team that's not in a win-now situation. And I'm not opposed to trading Tyrese Halliburton. It's not like he's going to be an MVP or anything like that. But he's a promising young player, and I think the path to building a decent team, you go one of two ways. And you bottom out like they did, you get a bunch of draft picks, and you either find your future stars in the draft or you find the young players that you can flip into your future stars in the draft. So if they had said, hey, we're going to put Tyrese Halliburton in the center of a deal and pursue Bradley Beal, okay, I would admit that would make sense to me. But to get Sabonis is a good player. You know, he's named for the All-Star team again. He's a good player. What does that get Sacramento? How much better do they get? You know, move up a couple of spots. You're competitive in a playoff series. Do you win a playoff series? And that's it. Like, but I guess the bottom line here is they value that a lot right now, and that's not something that. Where my brain is. My brain is long-term success.
Right. On the other side of that, does it really make the Pacers that much better?
Well, I think the Pacers have accepted reality. The Pacers have accepted, like, okay, this is who we are. We're starting to take this down, take it apart. And Halliburton, for them, is a good young piece. And not only Halliburton, you get Buddy Hield that you can turn around and flip Buddy Hield, either before the deadline, because you can immediately trade somebody in just a single player trade, or in the summer. So they have now a piece in Hield that is valuable. People are going to want his shooting. He's still expensive. I'm not a big fan, but some people are. And so you now have Halliburton, who is interesting and something that you can count on moving forward. And you have financial flexibility and you have tradable pieces beyond that. So, I mean, it's part of a rebuild, and they're starting to take their rebuild seriously.
We're talking with John Corrales on Downtown. Trade deadline a couple of days away. Let's start with Dennis Schroeder. He's going somewhere, but probably not Milwaukee.
Yeah, I mean, there's some rumors out there that they had some conversations. There was some Dante DiVincenzo chatter. I don't know exactly where that went, how long ago that went. It's one of those situations where sometimes somebody hears from a source, yeah, you know, the Celtics said, you know, we're talking to the Bucks. I know that was going on. And so somebody reports it at the time, but that could have been a conversation they had a month ago. So there was some conversation there, and that didn't really go anywhere. So it does seem like Schroeder is being shopped, and there are some probable offers that are out there. It's just a matter of which one the Celtics might take, or if they want to take one at all, I suppose. I'm not going to guarantee anything because you can't guarantee anything at the deadline. But it does seem like there's some traction there.
As happens this time every year, lots of chatter about Marcus Smart. But as you pointed out, the price that the Celtics are asking is often too high. Is that because they value him more than other teams do?
That's basically how it goes. It's like, you know, if you had like a classic car that somebody wanted and they said, hey, I'll buy it from you. And they give you like the actual value for the car. You'd be like, no, I have sentimental value. I have a sentimental attachment to this, you know, and you're going to have to pay more. Like you can have it, but you're just going to have to pay more because I'm attached to it. And I think that's the general Marcus Smart feeling. The Celtics have an attachment to Smart because of the value that he brings to this team. I think we've seen that when he does start at point guard, he could be a good point guard. He's not an all-star point guard. He's not an elite point guard, but he's a good point guard. And that's fine because he's an elite defender. And between the defense and the, you know, intangibles and the effort and that kind of stuff, I think there's really a lot of value to Marcus Smart on the Celtics. I think other teams want that value, want that same stuff from Marcus Smart. But when it comes down to brass tacks, they are going to have to pay up a little bit more. And what's going to end up happening is if there was a deal, the Celtics would come out way ahead. And they'd have to come out way ahead. And the other team just couldn't go back to their fan base and say, this is what we got from Marcus Smart. As much as they'd love a Marcus Smart on their team, you'd say, wow, you really gave up a lot there. And I don't think other teams really want to go that far.
So with the less than 48 hours before the trade deadline, who are a couple guys that you would say are maybe the most likely to be new members of the Celtics by Thursday?
You know, I can't say that I know that anybody is going to be. That's the thing here. I think that there might be some smaller kind of pieces like the Troy Brown Jr. if that deal with Chicago comes through. But there's chatter about Josh Richardson and Talen Horton Tucker from the Lakers. But I think there's chatter just in general with the Lakers. The Lakers are in trouble. And all they have is Kendrick Nunn, Taylor Horton Tucker, and draft picks. And the draft pick doesn't even start till like 2026. So they don't have a lot. And so every player's available guy in that middle range there is going to be targeted by the Lakers. And they're just going team to team. So I just don't see Josh Richardson moving. I think the value of Richardson to the Celtics is a little higher as well than it was like a month or two ago. So I don't see that happening necessarily. So I really think at the deadline, people should prepare for like, not a lot from the Celtics. A move for Schroeder, I always expected just draft picks. Maybe you get a player somewhere in there. Another maybe small move for PJ Dozier, a Bol Bol to maybe get moved for tax purposes. And I don't see a whole lot else. I'm sure there can be a surprise, but I'm really kind of like down on what the Celtics could bring in for the rest of this season.
When you look at the other teams in the Eastern Conference, is there a team, maybe Philadelphia, maybe somebody else, that really needs to make a move?
Well, I mean, yeah, Philly's the obvious choice that, you know, you got to make a Ben Simmons thing, but they're so hell-bent on the James Harden thing that they, I think, are just kind of, it's James Harden or bust. I would have said the Toronto Raptors, but they're really starting to play well. They've won six in a row. You know, maybe the Chicago Bulls will want to kind of, you know, bolster their lineup somehow. But yeah, I mean, if it's not Philly, then it may be further on down. Maybe the Atlanta Hawks, who have been active, they might move John Collins or somebody because they want to be better than what they are. The New York Knicks want to be better than what they are. The Knicks are out of the playoffs entirely, out of the play-in entirely. And Atlanta is sitting there at 10th. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Hawks made a move to try and capture some late season magic like they did last year. I wouldn't be surprised if the Knicks made a move to try to kind of shake things up a little bit and kind of get them back on track, because at 24-30 after their season last year, I think that's a real huge disappointment. They want to kind of turn that around a little bit. So Those would be the two teams that I think might be the most active. Everyone else, you know, everything's so tight in the East here that I think some teams, except for Cleveland, which, you know, congrats to them for making a bold move, but everyone else is just kind of like, oh, we're so close. Like, we don't want to upset the apple cart, so to speak.
Eight straight losses for the Nets. Are the Celtics catching them at the right time?
I would say so, yeah. I mean, they are without Kyrie, because it's a home game. No James Harden in this one, no Kevin Durant, no Nick Claxton. So another guy that can kind of like hang with Robert Williams a little bit. That's out. So the Brooklyn Nets look like they're, you know, the G League team at this point, and they very easily could be looking at nine straight losses, and at 29-25, they'd be down in the eighth seed with a loss to the Celtics tonight. Celtics should be up in the seventh seed, or tied for sixth, really, with Toronto. Nets are a mess. I mean, I still think that if they get healthy and if mandates change in New York and Kyrie's allowed to play, that things change. When Durant comes back, they'll go on a run. But right now, like, this is the time to get, you know, pick up a win against the Nets. If they don't win this game, we'll kind of erase a lot of the goodwill that they've earned over the 5-game winning streak.
Some good news for Jason Tatum.
Yes, he's going to be an All-Star starter. I was like, yes, Jason Tatum's going to start in the All-Star game, which speaks to, look, he's had such a rough start to the season. The fact that he could bounce back and still put up the numbers that he put up speaks to how he's gotten, been able to get to the rim, how he's been able to create for his teammates, the rebounding numbers, the defense. That when you have a shaky start to the season, an historically bad start to the season, and you still recover to a point where you can be an All-Star starter. Granted, it is because Durant is out with the injury, but still, to be up in that echelon is pretty good. So, that's a great thing for Tatum, and hopefully he uses that. Last time, you know, every time he gets like one of these big things, he uses it as fuel and he pushes for it. So let's hope that he, you know, starts putting together maybe some triple doubles as they get move forward, because he is a second half of the season type of player. And, you know, the Celtics can go on a little bit of a run now and after the All-Star break. They're right there, man. They're only 5 games out of first. Right. So moving into that top half of the East is not out of the question.
John Corrales, Boston Sports Journal, the Locked On Celtics podcast. Thanks as always, John. We'll catch you again next week.
All right. Talk to you then.